Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
British singer, songwriter, actress, mentor, and television personality Sunita is an 80s pop legend. She began her career as a model and professional dancer, collaborating with top choreographers such as Arlene Phillips, Gillian Gregory, Gillian Lynn, and the formidable Charles Augens. Sunita rose to fame as a successful recording artist with hits like So Macho, Toy Boy, GTO, Right Back Where We Started From, and Cross My Broken Heart. Her debut pop hit, So Macho, stayed at number 2 in the UK charts for 9 months, securing her a place in the Guinness Book of Records for the biggest selling single of the year, despite missing the number 1 position. Throughout her career, Sunita has released 5 albums and achieved 14 top 10 singles worldwide, including number 1s in the USA, Japan, Europe, and the United Arab Emirates. She has garnered over 12 music awards across the globe, from Japan to Australia and the UK, notably being recognized as the best club act on the LGBTQIA scene and winning the Japanese Grammy. Her theatrical career includes starring in West End productions of The Wiz, Masquerade, Cats, Little Shop of Horrors, Mutiny, Smokey Joe's Cafe, and Hair, as well as the recent regional tour production of Chicago playing Mama Morton. She has also appeared in pantomimes at the Mansfield Playhouse, the Cambridge Corn Exchange in the 90s, and the Esther Theatre in 2024. Additionally, Sunita has made her mark in films starring in Shock Treatment, Foreign Bodies, Heaven's a Drag, or To Die For, and The Friends. Sunita has contributed to numerous television programs, making guest appearances on several chat shows internationally and British reality shows. Sunita has played a crucial role as Simon Cowell's right-hand woman on ITV's The X Factor, aiding in the development of acts including One Direction, Ollie Murs, and Leona Lewis. She was a judge on Grease's The Word, helping find new talents for the West End. Renowned for her hits, Sunita has recently performed at notable venues and events, including the Tokyo Dome in Japan, Rewind Festivals, and the Masked Singer Stadium Tour. She also performed at the sold-out Hit Factory concert at London's O2 Arena. Behind the scenes, Sunita has been instrumental in nurturing new talent such as Daniel and Natasha Bedingfield, Mylene Klass, Ragiv, and Jonas Murren. In 2010, she launched her new talent site, Atenas.com. Sunita has been a pivotal figure in launching careers such as Griff, Yaz, and Bross, showcasing her diverse influence in the music industry. Embarking on a new business venture, Sunita has founded Sins Angels, a community for people over 50, sharing tips, treatments, and ideas to love and be their best for the rest of their lives. As an ambassador of the Princess Diana Awards, Sunita has shown a commitment to numerous causes. She also supports and participates enthusiastically with many other charities, especially fostering and adoption charities, LGBTQIA charities, and dog charities. Her recent TV appearances include Safe Word, Pointless, Weakest Link, Would I Lie to You, Season 1 of The Jump, Who's Doing the Dishes, Come Dine with Me, Through the Keyhole, and Get Your Act Together, further cementing her status as a versatile and enduring figure in the entertainment industry. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Sunita. Where do we find you in the world and how are you doing?
I'm really, really well. Where are you?
I'm in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Oh my gosh. Yes. I didn't know that. How amazing. Well, hello, Johannesburg.
And are you in London?
In a very rainy London.
Sunita, I know that you started off as a television presenter as a child and it's been a multi-decade journey. So at what age did you think, cool, you want to be in this creative production, entertainment world? And how did that journey progress to where we are today?
Do you know what? I think I always wanted to do this. Because I grew up with my mother, you know, I was backstage in the dressing rooms, I was in the club dressing rooms, I was in the tour buses. And so I was getting such an up close and personal kind of experience of what it was all about. And it all just looked like good fun for me. And I couldn't believe that it was a job. It was like, wow, you know, you get paid for doing this. So I used to always say, you know, when I grow up, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be in this show. I'm going to sing these songs. And of course you go, oh, darling, you know, it'll be gone by the time, you know, you're grown up. And it wasn't. It was all still in waiting. Yeah.
How did the transition happen from being a presenter on television to now then creating music, releasing songs? Was it a natural progression or were there specific steps that happened?
Well, things, I actually started in theatre. So I did musical theatre first. I did shows like The Wig, Cats, Little Shop of Horrors. But I was always doing demos and stuff because, again, I'd be going to the recording studio with my mom and with my aunt, often being, you know, pulled in to do, you know, the backing vocals to help out on tracks. So I was very used to being in a recording studio and the whole process of making a record. And then I used to do demos for friends, like for songwriters who needed, you know, singers just to sing the songs so they could send them out to record companies for other artists. So I used to do that when I was really young as well. I kind of had my fingers in so many pies that the transition from theatre to I was a children's television presenter.
Yeah.
And I just think people were noticing me. You know, that there's like certain times in your life where all the ducks are lined up. They say success is where preparation and opportunity collide. I was everywhere, into everything, just the right age at that time, that period in time where everyone was looking for somebody like me. And there I was.
You mentioned that you had fingers in many pies and that you were tenacious and out there and being seen. So when you started the music career, did you think at the beginning that it would be as successful as it was? Or did you just go there and think, cool, let's just have fun and see what happens?
Yeah, there wasn't really a game plan, sadly, because I wish there had been a game plan, because obviously we were pretty successful considering we were just playing it all by ear. Yeah. And of course, Simon's gone on amazingly huge things. But you just think, gosh, imagine if we'd known what we were doing and we'd had a game plan. You know, I just didn't want to have to get a proper job.
Yeah.
To me, that's what success was, is that, you know, if I can pay my bills and eat, you know, doing the things that I love, then I'm a success. So even before, you know, having hit records, just the fact I was making a record, to me, I sort of thought, well, this is great, because how many people get to do this, you know? But I don't think I ever imagined, you know, playing stadiums, being, you know, top of the charts around the world and things like that.
So I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the aesthetic of holding something, the journey of the choice, the journey of the unpacking, the booklet, the listening from song 1 to 10 or 15. I'm not sure if you're aware that CDs, even cassettes and vinyls are making a massive comeback. Vinyls alone last year in the UK, 5.9 million copies sold, the biggest since 1990. And cassettes and CDs are also on an upward trajectory. But we've also got these streaming platforms whereby people consume music on. What is your observation and perception of the landscape at the moment?
Well, you've just given me a great education. I thought that the whole vinyl resurgence thing was more of an underground kind of collector's thing. I didn't realize that it was going mainstream. I think it's really exciting because I think, you know, the music that was made, and you know, the music we made in those days, they were stories.
Yeah.
You know, they were proper kind of outpourings of, you know, whatever you were going through in life at that time, rather than just a sort of a hit track. And, you know, when you bought people's music, you bought the album because that was their body of work that, you know, they've disappeared for 2 years. That's what they've been doing. And here it is, kind of thing. So I think it's really exciting. And I think it's exciting that people will start to re-listen to some of the old music again and take in the whole story. Yeah.
I love that because it is a journey, a story, and an experience, as you mentioned. So you mentioned that you started off in theatre and last year you were in the regional tour of the musical Chicago. So what do you enjoy about doing live musical theatre?
Oh my gosh, I love playing somebody else. I suppose it's something that we do from when we're little kids, the whole sort of dressing up and acting and pretending to do this, but it's the ultimate sort of dress up, make believe experience. And especially once you've nailed your character, like it took me a little while to get into Mama Morton, because I was quite intimidated by the role. You sort of think, wow, this is the people who played her before me. And I also thought, maybe I'm too sly, I'm too little, my voice is too sweet, that kind of thing. I'm not the sort of typical Mama Morton. But once I got my teeth into that and started making up my own, you feel so empowered. And I almost couldn't wait. I sort of put on my suit and my bright red lip and my wig, and I could kind of feel this persona coming over me. I think I'm just a big hand who loves to just go and, it's like permission to just go and show off and throw my weight around and be in charge of those girls. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's a little dominatrix in me, I was loving it.
From the audience perspective, they go see one, maybe two of the shows. But you guys work damn hard. It's hours of rehearsals, shows every night, sometimes two shows a day on the weekends. So from a person acting on this stage, from your perspective, how do you maintain energy levels, body health, and mental health to maintain that type of routine to be on stage in a show like that?
I have to say it is a real discipline, because you can't, unless you're Sonia Evans, who is unbreakable, you can't really sort of be out after the show all night laughing raucously, drinking champagne, being crazy. You have to go home, you have to sleep, you have to eat well, particularly when you're on the road, because it's quite tiring. And then bringing that sort of identical performance. But you know what? I kind of learned on that last tour that it's not about bringing the identical performance. It's about bringing something more each time. So when I look at how the tour started to what I was doing by the end of the show, I've morphed into this whole creature, this whole character that I didn't really want to leave behind. But it was exciting because I felt like I really had invented her. Because in rehearsals, I was saying, well, what is she? What's her story? What's her background? How does she talk? How does she walk? Like, what's, because I wanted information. And they were like, she's whoever you want her to be. So that, was kind of unhelpful. But in the end, it was great fun, because you just, the sky's the limit, and you can just keep going and going and going. But it is hard work. It is hard work. And it's one of those things when you finish, you go, I'm never going to do that again, because suddenly you feel the exhaustion, but you don't really feel it till it's done.
Yes.
And you're on this, you end up on this kind of this momentum, this autopilot. And it takes your body a while to switch off and realize, okay, I don't have a show today. I'm not going to theater tonight. I can eat now. Because you can't even eat. You have to sort of choose certain hours and all of that. It really takes over your life.
And how long was that tour?
Do you know what? I signed up to do 6 weeks and then 12 weeks. And then they asked me if I was having a good time and I'd like to stay. And I said, yes, please. And then when I finished my 6 months, it was supposed to be over. Well, there were three different people who played her after me. And each one of them had... either one of them got COVID, one of them broke their foot, one of them had another situation. So they kept calling me back to come and play her. Like, we just need you for a few weeks. Can you do it? That would turn into more and more and more.
Yeah.
Now, that was really fun, because I almost felt like I wasn't really in the show, but I was just turning up to do the show to help out. So it's funny how you don't forget.
Exactly, because then the muscle memory kicks in.
Yeah.
Are there any on-stage theatre productions that you have yet to perform in but are on your bucket list to do so?
Ooh, gosh, there's so much. I don't think I've done nearly enough acting in my career at all, actually, considering I trained to be an actress. I ended up being a dancer and a singer.
Yeah.
So I would love to do more of anything on stage. I'd love to do, especially now that they mix it up so much as well. I came up when... black girls play black roles and things like that, but with Bridgerton and the way they do things now. Like, I've seen a black girl as Dorothy in the West End. I've seen
Yes.
black girl as My Fair Lady in the West End. So now it's kind of like, wow, you can play anything. But I'd love to be in a juicy kind of docu-series, something like Dynasty or Desperate
Yes.
Housewives or something, playing some crazy person. With a great wardrobe and fabulous bags,
Yes.
I want to play a boss. Yeah.
But unlike the 80s version of Dynasty, no massive shoulder pads and massive hair.
I don't know. Yeah, I love all that. I want
Okay.
the whole regalia.
Yes, I love that.
Sunita, what do you enjoy about performing live? So not in musical theatre productions, as in performing at concerts and so forth.
I've done a few of the sort of music festivals, and it's just exciting. It's just so exciting, and especially because I haven't done it for a while. So you get out there and you're rehearsed and you've got your dance, you know what you're doing, but it's when the audience is actually there interacting with you and you can talk to them and they talk back to you. It just puts a fuel in your tank that like no other. You suddenly feel like you take off to another level and you just want to give them everything. I love feeling like that.
So I'm that guy that's normally standing up right in front, dancing, jamming, doing my thing. I'll take my phone out and take a couple of videos, a couple of photos, and I'll put it away. I notice that the people around me, they oftentimes 70, 80%, 90% of the time videoing, posting, tweeting, photoing. From your perspective, being on the stage and seeing a bunch of phones, do you feel that takes away from the energy of the interaction with the audience and from them being in the moment? Or it's just where society is at this stage.
I don't find it off-putting, but it is a completely new culture, and I just kind of feel like, wow, I remember when, if you wanted to sing a ballad and people put the lighters up in the air to give you the light, and now it's mobile phones. So I just find myself standing there kind of going, wow, I'm really happy that I'm getting to see all these different transitions, because it wasn't like that before. But I know what you mean. And then you think, are they streaming this live for people at home who couldn't be here? Does it matter? I don't know, but I don't find it off-putting. I probably find it a bit flattering as well that that people bothered to want to film it.
Are there any plans to release new music?
We've been discussing it this week that I really, really want to do something. And I haven't really felt this way for a while, but maybe it's Kylie. I'm looking at everybody and thinking, oh my gosh, these are my peers and they're killing it. They're all doing it. I want to be out there too. You know what? So I just need an amazing song, an amazing producer, writer to sit down with me and do something, because I think I've got a lot to say, a lot to give, and I think it would be so much fun because they certainly look like they're having a good time.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 8 years, I know your answer will be different every time because there are millions of them. I recognize that and I understand that. I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. But if you had to push play to five songs by other artists once we finish this conversation, what would those five songs be and by whom?
So if I was wanting a little sort of dance around the living room, I'd probably Better the Devil, Kylie Minogue. Bill Withers' Lovely Day, because it's just uplifting and I think it's sexy and amazing. Oh my gosh. I like all these up songs. I also love a song called Sunshine on a Rainy Day. And I think it's by somebody called Zoe, or I'm not sure. Do you know the one I know? It's my solo, Trip, Trip, Trip Away. Sade's Paradise, I love. And, oh, Dream Come True, Brand New Heavies.
Great list. Some I need to add to mine, the others are already on, so thank you for that. So, Sunita, you've also been behind the scenes a lot, mentoring other artists. So, what does that mean to be a mentor for another artist?
It's a big responsibility and it's a real honor as well, because talent is God-given, I think. So to sort of be able to come alongside someone and help bring out the best in them or bring out what they're trying to express at that time is a real privilege. But what's more amazing is when they take off and become successful artists, you know, owning it for themselves and in their own right and in control of their careers. And you're thinking, oh my gosh, I can remember when you were too shy to even sing. Like little Griff.
Yes.
You know, she used to be a little girl in my church choir. And then I did a little girl group with her when she was 12 years old. And, you know, she used to cry sometimes, you know, where she would be uncomfortable or feeling shy or whatever. And now she's like this huge artist that you're just like, wow. You know, but there's so many, the Beddingfields, obviously One Direction, you know, Harry Styles, that you're just like, wow. They talk about Harry Styles in the same way they talk about Mick Jagger, you know, and you're thinking, that's little Harry. It's amazing. It's really, really, really amazing. And it gives me a lot of confidence because I sort of think, well, I have never spotted someone and thought they were great and they haven't gone on to do great things. So I feel like I've got good ears and good eyes.
I know they speak of, in inverted commas, the X factor. But is there something about the artists that you recognize in your eyes and ears, something that you can link to all of them? Or what is it about them that you think, ah, that's great?
Yeah, it is really strange because, well, obviously, I think all of them are a unique sort of sounding voice. And the rest, I think it is that X factor thing where you just go, there's just something about them. Yeah. I don't know if it's the look in the eye, but just something, because like I said, Griff was even very, very, very shy.
Yeah.
But so when they sang, when they started to sing, they turned into stars before your very eyes, even before it had happened. You could just imagine. It was like a premonition of the future they sang. Where wow, this is one of them. Yeah.
What is next? What's happening short term and long term?
Well, do you remember the Now series albums?
Yes, of course, yes.
That used to be. Well, a woman called Pippa has written a musical based around the music from the Now series albums. Craig Revel Horwood, who's one of the judges and big ballroom stars here, is directing. And Sonia, Carol Decker and I are going to be starring in it, not all together, but at different venues, different locations around the country. So I'm looking forward to that. So we start rehearsals for that in late August. And then we're going to go on tour, which was going to be great fun.
So is it a musical with sort of a storyline, or you guys are just going to be singing songs?
Yeah, it's a storyline with music. It's about two girls who, I think, in the 80s, or they go back to the 80s and sort of have all these experiences, and we're there. So we sort of make appearances. I think we have a few scenes and a few songs each time as well. So that's going to be good fun.
Yes.
And then I also have, I'm launching a business called Sins Angels,
yes,
which is a kind of lifestyle wellness website for treatments, sharing information, tips, doctors, recipes, whatever is making you fabulous in your 50s and 50 plus, male and female. It started with female, but a lot of people are like, well, what about us? And it's like, yeah, what about you? Why can't it be guys as well? So, yeah, everybody just contributing it. It's like my kind of, I suppose it's my Goop, but it's also sort of interactive. So it's like, you know, I source a lot of great things, but it's also about the angels who are like my sort of gang of friends.
Yeah.
Some celebrities, non-celebrities, having experiences or going to places or finding products. And then if they think they're amazing, they share them with us. And members can join the site. They join the website and then want to buy any of the products or experiences or whatever. They get a discount through getting them through our website.
Yes. It's amazing with this sort of ageism, in inverted commas, if you're over a certain age, it means now in society now you're a has-been. You're no longer relevant. Your voice is no longer heard. You can no longer contribute. And it's actually a lot of nonsense, really, because it's just a number.
It really is just a number, especially if you take care of yourself. And this is kind of almost the message. It's like, don't look at, okay, maybe you've got a few spare tires. Guess what? You can lose that.
Yeah.
Whatever you think is the problem, you can actually deal with it. And guess what? You're still you. Exactly. And actually, you're probably the best version of you because Now you know what you, like people used to say, oh, if you could have any wish, what would you want? Usually it's wisdom because it's like, oh, if I knew what I knew now when I was 16, I'd rule the world. Well, it's kind of like, yeah, but know what you know now and use it now. You don't have to be 16.
Exactly.
You know, so long as you're fit and healthy, it's like, do it now. So I've got people writing books who talked about it for 20 years but didn't have time, or they had kids, or this happened, that happened, they went through divorce. And so, yeah, all that happened, and then what? What are you doing right now?
Exactly.
Nothing. So exactly. Do it now.
Well, it's interesting because I often hear people say that this age means they're now old, which means they can't do this, or they're that age, so their body shouldn't be able to do that, or they're injured because keep getting injured, or their body's not working as it should be because now they're old in this age. And I always say to them, you know what? You're as old as you want to be, and that's your choice.
Yeah, if you need to lie about your age, whatever you need to do, but do, like, literally, you know, we don't have to dress our age. We don't have to wear our hair a certain, like, all the rules that were created in 1950 no longer apply.
Exactly. So the podcast is listened to throughout the world. So as a final message, what would you like to say?
Oh, my gosh. I would like to say hi to everybody. I had so much fun traveling the world, meeting everyone when I was younger. And thank you for all the support, people who bought the music, people who danced to the music or just appreciated it. And hopefully we're going to do something new soon and I'll get to travel and see you all again. And let's do something now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.